Let's get the meeting to state government finance to order. And we don't have quite have a quorum yet. We do now. We have a quorum, so I'll officially call the meeting to order. Representative Dorholt. Excuse me, Representative Mahoney. Representative Mahoney, House File 2658.
Mr. Crick, sir.
I'll move House File 2658 to be sent to...
No, I think it has to go to Ways and Means.
Yep, that's what I'm looking at the list here.
That's the reason I'm here.
Yeah. Representative Murphy's up, Chair Murphy's up presenting a bill, and Representative Newton's up presenting a bill, so that's why I've been tasked with starting the meeting here. They'll be down later.
Well, they couldn't have picked a better chair, Mr. Chair.
Oh, boy.
I better look my feet. It's getting deep in here. I'll move that House File 2658 be before the committee. And Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last year in the workers' comp bill, which is negotiated by business and by labor, and comes to an agreement, they included coverage of post-traumatic stress disorder for workers' comp. And what they didn't realize is that the way workers' comp is set up is if you have an incident, let's say there is a an automobile accident, and there's a variety of injuries, and you have a whole series of different organizations, emergency responders, come and respond, and five or six of those men or women claim post-traumatic stress, which is certainly possible. The way the insurance company, the insurance thing is set up, is that that is one incident, all five or six or ten of them. What this bill does is, part of the repair in this bill is that it allows them to be used as, to be claimed as individuals, so it is a faster step to the reinsurance where all the insurance companies pay for it. That's where the $30,600 cost comes, because the state of Minnesota would have to will have to participate in that reinsurance because we are self-insured in our workers' comp. And so it's a $30,600 cost to the state to deal with the PTSD structure. That's it. That's all we're doing in this bill that I suspect you want to hear.
And Representative Mahoney, I have a note here from Mr. Shepard that... we need to delete.
Oh, that's right.
On page 6, lines 6.7 to 6.11, so I don't have to see it in state gov or government operations.
Is it, Mr. Chair? Is it 6.5 to 6.9?
6.7 to 6.11 is the note 6. I have.
7 to 6.11. Okay. Right.
So I'll move that amendment. That oral amendment, they would delete line 6.7 to 6.11. Any questions on that amendment? If not, all in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it. The motions or the amendments adopted. Representative Mahoney, this is the product of the Work Comp Advisory Council.
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair. And as again, the Work Comp Advisory Council. Most often negotiates a fair deal between all parties concerned, whether it's the insurance company or the Chamber of Commerce or labor or lawyers or doctors or whomever, and they all come to agreement and they bring the bill forward.
Is there anybody in the audience that needs to speak for or against this bill? Is there any questions for members? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 2658, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor of the amendment or the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members.
The bill's re-referred. And the next bill we have is 2785, Representative Dorholt. Did you're coming down?
Yes.
They asked to go first, but they had to get to the meeting.
Welcome, Representative Darholt, Ms. Hartnett. The House File 2685 was laid on the table, and I will take it up for reconsideration today before the committee. Representative Darholt, I heard the discussion very carefully last week, and there has been an amendment prepared, 2785DE1 amendment. And the fiscal note, if I remember, was there was a high and there was a low, and the low was about $8,000. And then at that time, I reminded committee members of the hearing that we had in January and the new programs or the extended programs that MMB were offering various state agencies. And we had I had a small conversation, and I think you also did, with somebody from MMB. And as a result, I recommend passage of DE1. What do you think about that?
Madam Chair, I think that'd be excellent.
Ms. Hartnett?
Madam Chair, we're thrilled.
Would the department, someone representing the department, MMB, please come down? And welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives, my name is Ann O'Brien, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner at Enterprise Human Resources at MMB.
And what do you think about DE1?
We have worked hard on this amendment, and we are pleased to be able to provide. We know this is an important issue for the committee. We also have worked hard with at MMB to make sure that we have these initiatives available so that agencies can increase the number of people with disabilities available for employment with the state. And we are happy to support this initiative.
Thank you very much. So it's a good deal for everyone.
It is, absolutely.
Okay. I move passage of H2785DE1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Do you have anything more to say, Representative Darholt?
Thank you very much for helping and bring the whole team together.
Okay. I will renew my motion and recommend that House File 2785, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee of Ways and Means. All in favor, or is there any further discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Cooperation really works. It's thank good. You. Thank you very much. Representative Fritz, Representative Fritz, Minnesota Secure Choice Retirement Savings Plan. We also held your bill over, Representative Fritz, and said it needed a little work, and it looks like you've done a little work.
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct.
So, Representative Fritz, there's an amendment. Is that your amendment, Representative Fritz?
Correct, yes.
I move H2419A7.
That's right.
Ms. Roberts, do you want to talk about the fiscal note, the new fiscal note, or the old fiscal note, and how the old fiscal note would be amended with this bill?
Madam Chair, and
or with this amendment, I mean.
Madam Chair, members, on the previous version of the bill, you had a fiscal note that included a estimate for the cost of the study that ranged between $500,000 to $1 million, and the fiscal note was showing the mid-level impact of $750,000. The Delete Everything has revised some of the requirements of the study, and it includes in the bill an appropriation for $300,000. So, and that appropriation would be available until spent. So the cost of the bill then would be what's included in the appropriation.
And Representative Fritz, did you or any of the people that are advocating for this bill talk about the fiscal note with MMB?
Yes, it we have. And we came up with the $300,000. Okay. Came down considerably from the other.
Very considerably. But Ms. O'Brien, are you still here? Or Ms. Pollard?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have the feeling, Mr. Pollard, I have the feeling last week, or the last time we heard this bill, that it was vague. Big picture, but some things were vague. And so when we questioned on the fiscal note, and we were talking about 1 million Minnesotans at that time, I understand. And if we get, this moves along, and we get even more precise on our criteria and on the choices of things that we choose to have included in the study. Could this be reduced down even further and still maintain the goal of the big picture?
Madam Chair.
Somewhat, in some ways.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Pollard, Minnesota Management and Budget. Certainly the scope of the bill could be limited more, and that would bring the cost down. I'm probably not the best person to talk about the goal of the work, but yes.
Right, but you are very familiar with your agency.
Yes, Madam Chair.
And you are the spokesperson for your agency at this precise moment.
Yes, Madam Chair.
And you have experience in government for a long time now. And so you know how helpful the people in your agency are to try to help the representatives reach their goals.
Yes, Madam Chair.
And even more than that, Mr. Pollard, I have the feeling and the sense and a memory of how those state employees at your agency want to help Minnesotans all across the state. At our very first meeting last year, we talked about how agencies are really reaching out statewide to Minnesotans. And if this committee chooses to send this bill along the way, we figure that it would be a full cooperative effort. Cooperation is a good thing. A cooperative effort with the agencies, the people of Minnesota, the people that are hoping this bill will go along its way, and all of us representatives that vote yes. And so you want to be part of that, don't you, Mr. Pollard?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we fully believe at Minnesota Management and Budget that we work on behalf of the entire state, and we'd be happy to help in any way we can.
Thank you. Representative Fritz.
Well, Madam Chair, I could not have said it better. Thank you very much. Actually, in the amendment that you moved, the A7 amendment, the questions 1 through 6 are questions that the study must answer. The remaining questions are questions that could be answered and in public hearings, public testimony, public meetings, and a lot of those are, you know, those. That's more of an optional part of the study. But to me, all of the questions that are here in this amendment, I would like discussed and answered and reported back to us so that we can have all of the information that we need to take a look at how we could, for the, all of the people in Minnesota, offer a retirement plan that would work and be successful.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Pollard, you know, I really appreciate your wanting to help Minnesotans. Does this include absorbing the cost of this at MMB?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, no, it would not.
Oh. It's a shocker.
Surprise. We won't go any further there. I move 2419A7 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion is adopted. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you help explain, whoever would like to, how this is going to put together? I think in the previous testimony we heard that you're going to survey 750 people, and 750,000 people, and you know, in the middle of a campaign, knowing what it costs to put mailings out, both of, you know, when you send it out first class, and you have to pay for the return postage to get it back. That a buck a person, that's nominal. I'm not even sure that covers it because you have price of just printing any kind of survey instrument that's that large and that complicated is probably going to cost conservatively a 50 cents a piece. So I'd like to know what the survey, and I'll have some follow-ups, Madam Chair, but how we're going to get the survey to go from, I thought $750,000 was a good deal. Now we're going to get it down to $300,000. And despite how charming Madam Chair is and her cajoling to get MMB to somewhat go along with this, that they might be able to do it for nothing. I guess that's what we mean by cooperation. But please explain how you're now going to survey the amount of people that will make this a valid statistical survey.
Madam Chair and Representative Benson, thank you very much, because I would like to clear that misconception up, and I honestly believe I may have misspoke when I did give you the number 750 to a million. That's how many people that would benefit. Now, we won't be surveying all 750,000 or 1 million people. There'd be, however the study is composed, a sampling of those folks, and then go from there. So the expense would certainly not be that, the postage would not be that high.
Madam Chair.
Representative Benson.
Thank you. So thank you, Representative Fritz. I kind of wondered if that was the number, but that was the number that you gave us, you know, a couple days ago, so I was going to go with that. But even at that, $300,000 is not a lot of money to do a survey that is as all-encompassing as this will be. Because my assumption is not only are you going to survey the people who would benefit from this, but you're also going to have to talk with, survey, you know, the people in the financial industry that would provide some of these services. So I know this is, we're getting late in the hour, but I'd like to see the anatomy of, you know, what does this really look like? And when it's all said and done, what we paid for a $300,000 survey, how that is statistically valid in order for the legislature to make, you know, we're creating Social Security more or less, you know, at a state level, and that's a huge leap for $300,000.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, this is a study. The $300,000 is a study, not the survey. So, however, all of the questions, like I said, in 1 through 6 must be answered. And then the financial agencies and ERISA and all of those folks have already been very helpful to us and will and have offered to come and to join us in helping us with the study. So that is a cost factor right there that we would have in the chair's good words, cooperation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, and Madam Chair, just one last
Representative Benson.
Just a comment, and that is, well, I still remember it resonated quite a bit because there's a lot of folks from Veterans Affairs and the like that went here that before us is a bill that has an appropriation of $300,000 and we have zero. So I thank you for your work and your effort. I'm not sure how this will fall. If it can proceed, if it's going to get laid over and included, or however, but I'm not sure. Survey, study, however you want to put it, in order to get a survey or study, you need data in order to do that, and that costs a few bucks. So, my caution is that $300,000 to put this study together seems to fall far short of what's really needed to make it a valid study. Thank you,
Representative Crenshaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one quick question, Representative Fritz, from your testimony. And I understand now, I've had some clarity, this is just simply a study. We're trying to find out what the problem is. We're asking the questions. I think that's valid. Let's have the conversation. My question is, you said in there $750,000 would be the amount of those who would benefit. I just want to make sure your words are correct. Benefit from what?
That would be able to...
Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That hopefully, in my words, would be able to have the opportunity to save their own money for their own retirement.
Okay, and follow up? Follow up to that, Madam Chair?
Representative Crenshaw.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And so, and this is why I want to ask, if we're at the survey step, I understand your intentions, but if what you're saying to me is that $750,000 may benefit from those, that seems to be we're already at the conclusion. And my question is, shouldn't we be back asking the question first of, are there going to be any beneficiaries? Is there any value in doing that? That seems to me what a survey is let's find out and have that conversation. I just want to make sure we're not at the conclusion and trying to prove where we want to be, which is, I think, the concerns of the committee that we'll end up spending money on a program that we haven't fully vetted. So... And your thoughts on that? I just want to make sure your words were clear.
Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Crenshaw. The fact of the matter is that these are the folks who do not have access to financial products at work. And so they would be given that opportunity to save their own money for their own retirement. And in some ways, it's kind of like parents who save their money for their children's college. It's why can't we find out how we can save money for our own retirement so that when we get to the nursing home, we actually have some money and we don't have to rely on government programs.
Representative Crenshaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think this is the divide that I have. And I understand the intent and mean no ill will by it, but I'm at the survey. I backed up to say we're having the question. You're a couple steps ahead of me, which is why I think I'm looking at this saying this is premature. Yeah. If we were just to go back to ask the question to find out what the inquiry and the conclusion would be, I would be fine with it. But it sounds like we're already getting to which is what you're trying to solve.
And thank you for that, Mr. Representative Crenshaw. And I do have someone here who could probably answer that clearly. Madam Chair, if I could.
Representative Fritz.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mary Jo George with AARP Minnesota, thank you for the opportunity to testify. Representative Crenshaw, I think what we are trying to do here is really look at the feasibility of a state-administered plan. We know, as Representative Fritz said, there are about nearly 40% of workers in Minnesota today that don't have access to a retirement savings product, if you will, at their workplace. So really this is looking at, in order to develop a state administered plan, how many people would we need to make it feasible? How would we be able to afford it? What kind of investment strategies would be available? So it really is not putting the cart before the horse. We really are just trying to study, is this even a feasible option? Does it violate any ERISA laws? We need to find that out before. And I just want to say one thing. AARP's been working really nationwide with other states. There's many states that are exploring different options for retirement savings, because I think the good news is we think we can get ahead of this problem, because we know people do save when given the opportunity to save at work. And I think it's really because they don't see the money coming in. If it comes out of your paycheck before you ever see it, 7 out of 10 folks tend to save when they have that option. So we're trying to get at those sort of approaches of how can we make it easier for people to save. So I hope that was clear, because we don't want to presume we're having a state-facilitated plan, but we need to answer a lot of questions.
I'm Representative Crenshaw, and that's one of the reasons I maybe, in some people's mind, overdid on management, budget management, is that this enterprise talent management presentation and the people that they are building over there do have the talent and do have the ability to make this feasibility study a better thing and a refined thing that answers direct questions for options. And I feel confident that cooperation will bring a good conclusion or a solution to the progress that they make as they go along. But you have one more question.
Yes, and I think I now, thank you, I think I now understand, and this is why I struggle, and this is why I could have supported this if, let me do it this way. It seems to me, for lack of better analogies, we've determined that we're already going to do this. Now we're just building a feasibility study. So my analogy would be, we've determined that we need a Senate office building. We're at the architectural place, and we're not at asking the question whether we really need it or not. If we were back at the point of asking the question of whether we really needed this or not, I would be all about this and say, let's survey. But you said to me, your words are, this is a feasibility study, which tells me we've moved beyond that to the architectural plans. That I'm not comfortable with. So I just want to understand what I'm voting on and where I'm at on this. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Crenshaw.
Thank you.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to bring the rest of the committee members up to speed, Representative Lesch, Chair Murphy, Representative Nelson, Representative Kahn, and myself represent the House with a few others who aren't present here today. Oh, Representative Benson, I forgot you too, sir. So we've got about more than one-third of the members of the Pension Commission represented on this commission, this committee today. One of the things that we've been looking at and grappling with in the interim and through this session was, how do we deal with these same kinds of issues as it relates to public employees? And using the word that the chair brought up is the idea of cooperation. I guess I want to know how this is going to work in cooperation with the goals and objectives of the Pension Commission, because I suspect that there's going to be a number of people that you're looking at in your survey that are already public employees who have different options that are available. And paralleling this, the Pension Commission last night said that they were going to put on hold some things till they could collect some additional information to make some determinations of people who might be employees of government-related employee who don't qualify for PERA or TRA or MSRS or any of the other derivatives of those plans. So I'm wanting to know how those activities that the Pension Commission is undertaking are going to augment, conflict, be redundant with what we're looking at doing here, because we were told that there were a large number of individuals there as well. I'm just wanting to know from the taxpayer's perspective if we're being redundant or if we've been able to isolate these groups.
Madam Chair, Representative
Fritz,
this is a defined contribution plan, so this would not be offered at all to any public anyone that's participating in a public PERA or TRA plan.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fritz, I would concur with you that if you are a participant in TRA or PERA or MSRS, that this might not be the group that we're looking for. But one of the things that we discovered through our work in the Pension Commission is that there is a segment of people who are not meeting the requirements for a pension who may still be an employee in a public entity that we were looking, how could we require those individuals to participate in a plan and employer contribution in a defined contribution versus a defined pension plan or benefit plan that the aforementioned state pension plans would offer. Again, with the goal and objective, and I'm just kind of seeing these things crossing at the same intersection, and I just want assurance that we're not being redundant, since I'm hearing this for the second or third time in committees. I'm a member of the Pension Commission, very vocal about wanting to make sure that we keep our promises and that we do make opportunities available to people. Representative Kreisha, I tend to agree with you as well that it's a foregone conclusion. We're going to go ahead with it. I just want to make sure that we're doing this in the most efficient way to be able to get the most efficient answers from both objectives of what the Pension Commission is looking at doing and what we're trying to make available, since there's going to be considerable state resources invested in both.
I think we, somewhere down the road, we can get those goals together. By working, by getting data on the various, more the Pension Commission will be working with the public employees and their spouses and so forth, and this one. But I don't know if that'll happen. But I hope if this goes. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, using the word cooperation, maybe we should work with the Pension Commission and the goals of this to put the right data together so that we can look at this, because I do fear that we're going to be having parallel tracks on these kinds of things, because the Pension Commission didn't even define last night, we were discussing this, what those investment vehicles might look like, where would those go, what are we going to do. We do have, as legislators know, and other elected officials know, that we are not in a defined benefits plan, we're in a defined contribution plan that the law requires us to participate in, that there's a system that's available, I believe it's administered by ING Financial Advisors as our delivery mechanism on that, that we participate in. Are we expanding that program to include these other individuals? I think that we need to step back if this is going to be done, and we need to put a game plan together that says, this is what the state of Minnesota's objectives are, yes, to help employees who aren't covered, that are public employees. Here's what the defined benefits are, and here's something else that we'd be looking at. And I don't think that this bill incorporates the needs of the Pension Commission and the work that the Pension Commission is going to be doing. And I would ask that we step back and take a breath and say, should we be looking at cobbling this together in cooperation with the work of the Pension Commission as well?
Any further discussion? If not, is there anyone else that wants to testify? Then I will renew my motion and recommend that House File 2419, First Engrossment, as amended, be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Before we vote, however, I would like to remind you of what I said last week, that the whatever the fiscal note is for this, whatever money is available for this, has never, ever, ever, ever been part of the appropriations of this committee or any of the agencies that this committee is responsible for. Ever. The money is being carried in some other bill, in some other target, not as part of our target, which is zero. We are, our committee's appropriations, though, do cover budget management, which is one of our agencies that we are responsible for. Budget management has the talent and resources, human, to help in this bill in the future. They are not absorbing the costs of this bill. The money that goes into this study, if it is passed, will be under the category in the budget resolution of other bills. No agency that's in our jurisdiction is responsible for this bill. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members.
Representative Howe.
I'm thinking I should sit on that side of the table. Maybe I'd have better luck.
Want to try it? Yeah, maybe you should sit in the middle.
I don't feel like a sandwich to me.
Welcome back, Representative Howe. This bill was heard on March 17th, and it was heard on March 24th, where amendments were offered, testimony was taken, discussion occurred. From what Representative Howe told me before the committee, that evidently more people have become aware of this bill in those few days that have passed. And the people that are lined up outside of my office seem to indicate that they are more aware. Discussion is good. Listening is very good. And Representative Howe listened and came back on the 17th or the 24th and had some changes. And now, even today, more discussion has taken place. Representative Howe, the bill is now again 2117 is back before the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I'd like to move the DE3 amendment. It's a delete all amendment.
Representative Howe, what is this DE3 amendment? It says delete everything.
Delete all, Madam Chair. It deletes all and adds, and if you'd like me to, I'd go through it line by line, but it deletes everything and then adds back in a veteran's choice of either a civil service commission or the 3-member board that's currently in law. All it does is give the veteran the choice, and then it also, what we heard earlier...
Excuse me a little bit. Go back to what we're giving the... Why is the veteran getting to make a choice?
Madam Chair, I'm going to go through the bill line by line, if that would be more appropriate. All right. The DE3 amendment now allows the veterans to make a choice between using a civil service type commission or the county personnel board and the 3-member panel. Lines one.
What
point
represent? Go back further than that, please, and tell us what veteran and why is the veteran making a choice?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the Veterans Preference Act, and this section of the law pertains to the removal of a veteran from employment. So this is where the county the governmental subdivision gives the employee, the veteran, a notice of discharge. So a notice of intent to discharge. So then in this, what is always, well, 2 years ago, I believe, we changed it to give the veteran a 60-day time period to respond to whether they want to use to respond with his intent to use a veteran's hearing process. Currently in statute, it requires that if a city or a governmental subdivision has a civil service board or a county personnel board, that that must be heard by that board. If they do not have that board, or they don't have a civil service commission, it is then goes to a three-member panel. One chosen by the veteran, one chosen by the governmental subdivision, the third chosen by those two members. Currently, as that goes through, currently the cost of that has been established by the administrative law judges that the governmental agency picks up the hearing cost and each pays their own attorney fees. That has come to due to the fact that it's silent in the statute. We currently had a governmental subdivision sue the veteran for the cost of the hearing. That was the impetus of bringing this bill forward, is to put it in statute so we don't face the veteran doesn't face that again, and put those costs in writing in statute. So that's why the bill is before us. That's what brought this forward, and that's why we're here at this point today.
Very good. And the DE3 amendment gives a choice.
Yes, Madam Chair. The DE3 amendment gives the veteran the option, instead of requiring the veteran to go to a civil service type commission, it gives the veteran the choice. If he feels comfortable with the civil service commission and feels that he'll get a fair and impartial hearing, he can choose that method. If he chooses to go to the three-member panel, it gives him that option. So he's not required by law to choose one or the other. He's given the option to choose one. And in the DE3 amendment, he must do that choice within that same 60-day period. If he fails to make that choice in that 60-day period, the governmental subdivision may choose which board the hearing goes in front of.
Representative Frager.
Just a quick procedural question at this point. I may have more questions as we get further into this discussion. I know the DE3 amendment is before us. It looks like there's a secondary amendment, the A7 amendment. Is that incorporated into this at this point?
No.
Okay. Or should it be? Is that the authors? I guess I'm just...
No.
Okay.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you want me to go through this? Are we going to vote on the DE3 amendment first, beforehand, or do you want me to go through it line by line?
How would you like?
I would like to vote on whether we accept the DE3 amendment.
And that's the way you want.
Yes, Madam Chair. That would put the bill in the form the author would prefer.
Any further discussion on that? Okay. All in favor of adopting the DE3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I can walk the members through line by line, I prefer to do that so everyone has a fair understanding of what changes have been made. On lines 1.21 to 1.25, it identifies that the veteran's response to the notice to discharge must now include the veteran's choice of the hearing board. hearing body, either a civil service board or the merit authority, or by the three-person panel as defined by current law. If the veteran fails to identify their choice, as I noted before, the governmental subdivision or employer may select the hearing body. Lines 2.1 to 2.25 deletes the requirement to use the civil service board. It is now an option. Lines 2.5 to 2.6 now indicates that the veteran hearing may be heard in either a civil service or a three-member panel. Lines 2.8 to 2.11 indicates that if the government employer has a civil service type board, that the veteran now has the choice of which body will hold the hearing. There is no change to the rest of the bill from the previous edition. Lines 3.1 to 3.2 remain the same as to the cost of each party. Members, those of us that have served in the armed forces fully understand that it was our role to take care of those that served with us. The committee is charged with taking care of veterans in much the same manner, only from a more distant relationship. It is our duty to set the policies that provide the framework for governmental subdivision employers to actually set the example of how veterans are to be treated in the workplace. It is our duty to ensure that these veterans receive a fair and impartial hearing prior to discharge, when being faced with the discharge from employment. This does not guarantee that the veteran will retain their employment. It just allows them the opportunity to do a fair and impartial hearing. The employer begins this process. And this bill now identifies who pays what, so they know when starting this process what cost each party is responsible for. It protects the veteran from unreasonable costs of the hearing. I move to you that let's take care of the veterans and give them a fair and impartial hearing without burdening the cost with the hearing process. Madam Chair, I renew my motion to recommend that House File 2117, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register.
Mr. Bickerstaff, Representative Howe talked a little bit about the cost. The current law, who pays?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, under current law, it's not currently defined in law who pays. As far as I know, from a practical perspective, it's generally the governmental subdivision that covers the costs of these hearings.
And with DE3 amendment adopted, who pays?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the DE3 amendment solidifies in statute that the governmental subdivision pays all costs associated with the hearing other than the veteran's attorney's fees. So it takes, again, from my understanding, what is current practice and puts it in the statute to eliminate question in the future.
And Representative Howe, why do you choose to have DE3 just the way it is rather than mention costs?
Can you restate that, Madam Chair, because I'm not quite sure.
Well, you said your last statement about costs was that you wanted DE3 passed without costs.
Well, Madam Chair, I think my last statement mm-hmm. was the cost of the hearing, as we heard in testimony of the one veteran that went through the hearing process, retained his position, and then was sued by the governmental agency for $64,000. and then had to retain keep his attorney to go through that process to get the judge to dismiss it. I don't think any of us want another veteran to have to go through that. I believe that when that board was decided that the governmental agency should know what those costs, that they understand, they should have understand, Madam Chair, that when they started this process, they should have understood that the cost of that hearing was going to be borne by them. They have a whole host of options on how to deal with a veteran. They can put them through remedial training, they can discipline them, they can do all kinds of folks, but when they choose to discharge the veteran, and some of them definitely do need to be discharged, I'm not going to argue that, but we owe them the right to go through a veteran's hearing without financially breaking them while we do it. So this just guarantees the veteran's right to go through that process.
Representative.
Madam Chair and Representative Howe. So with what's before us today, the appeals process after this process plays out, none of that changes at all with this legislation. Is that correct?
No.
Okay. And if I could have a little bit of latitude, Madam Chair.
You said, is that correct?
Yes. Madam Chair, that is correct. The process remains the same. It just gives them a choice.
And Madam Chair, and this is just a question. I'm assuming this applies to women veterans as well? Because your language is always him.
And I caught myself. It is, yes, Madam Chair, it is the veteran. I did serve with, under my command, I had 53 women veterans. It applies to all veterans.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And veterans of both genders receive termination notices from time to time?
That would be true, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Howe. I noticed we all received an email this morning from a representative of St. Louis County who had some concerns about this legislation. I also heard from...
That came to me, or did we all receive it?
I think we all did,
okay.
Yeah. I also heard from the city manager of one of the cities in my district, which has a civil service commission. They had some similar concerns, and I know they'd spoken with the League of Minnesota Cities about those concerns, too. Just going off this email, since it's in our packets here, I just have a couple questions. This Mr. Gottschald, in his letter here from St. Louis County, he says, we oppose the elimination of civil service commissions or personnel boards. You know, as I read the DE3 amendment, which is now before us, it wouldn't eliminate civil service commissions. It enables the veterans going through the process to elect which body will hold the hearing. I guess I'm just wondering what the practical effect of that election is. I mean, you've sort of described the civil service commission process as being somewhat onerous on veterans. Is this, you know, essentially we're giving them a choice, but they'd always choose to go the three-person panel route? I mean, do you expect civil, you know, I've never gone through the process, so I just don't know. Would a veteran, do you think, ever choose a civil service commission process?
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are veterans out there that believe the civil service board will give them a fair shake, and if they believe that they're in a jurisdiction that has a veteran service or a civil service commission that will be unbiased and give them a just hearing, by all means, they should have that opportunity. And so I have put that back in to give them an option to do that. But I do know, and we've heard testimony to the fact, that there have been incidents where they did not get a fair and just hearing. So this just gives that veteran a choice of which he'd like to do. So I would believe that there are some that would like that quick and easy method to get it done, possibly without even an attorney. So I think this gives them that option.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Howe, Madam Chair. Mr. Gottschall also mentions the proposed process will almost certainly result in veterans subject to discharge being paid in paid status for the entire six-month period, and he argues that's a financial hardship on cities. Do you think that would occur? Does that seem like a possibility under the DE3 amendment?
Madam Chair, I believe that the author of that email is referring to an old version. In fact, that was the original version that he's referring to that had a six-month time limit and process. That has since been removed. That is nowhere in the DE3 amendment.
It takes a long time for some communications to go north. Representative Freiberg.
So just for confirmation purposes, I kind of thought that was the case, and I think it might be the case here, too. He says we also oppose three times the actual damages sustained for intentional disregard for the protections. Specifically suggests that veterans can only be removed for incompetency or misconduct. Have those provisions been removed as well? Just for the record, kind of.
Madam Chair, yes, they've all been removed.
Sorry.
Proceed, Representative.
In the DE3 amendment, it says on line 3.1, the governmental subdivision shall bear all costs associated with the hearing except the veterans' attorney's fees. I'm just wondering, do you think there would be more need for attorneys in a hearing before the board as opposed to civil service commission? I just wouldn't want the effect of this legislation to actually drive up costs for veterans if they do have to retain an attorney and pay the fees, which could be substantial. I guess Representative Howe.
I don't think this is going to drive them up, Madam Chair. I believe that this actually just clarifies that the veteran's going to end up bearing those costs, and that's the way it has been in the past. I'm not fully comfortable with that. It was up to me. The governmental subdivision would pay the veterans' fees also, but I am trying to get peace in the valley, and will actually just go with what's usury and customary at the present time.
Representative Freiberg.
This is the last question, I promise. This is probably more than I've asked all year. Since this is fairly new language, I see there is a representative of the League of Minnesota Cities here. If it's amenable to the chair, I would be interested in hearing what their perspective on this new version is.
Did the League of Cities appear last week or the other day? League of Cities can come forth.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Ann Lindstrom with the League of Minnesota Cities. I want to thank Representative Howe because he did reach out to us repeatedly to work on this language. What I will say is that, you know, we are an organization that represents 855 cities. Some of them have civil service commissions and some of them don't. So we have remained neutral on that option of it. What we have wanted, and we did express this to Representative Howe, is it's obvious that there are some changes that are needed in this entire process. And we were hoping that we could spend some time in the interim. I sort of cringe when I say this, but the word study or task force might have been thrown around in a conversation between local units of government, the political subdivisions, as well as with the Department of Veterans Affairs. So I know that we have some cities who did testify last time, Minneapolis and St. Paul, as well as Golden Valley, New Hope, Coon Rapids, who all have very significant concerns about the language around the civil service commissions. But as far as our position goes, we are very supportive of the language that delineates who pays what, because as was discussed, that is what happens in practice.
Thank you, Ms. Lindstrom. We're all very cautious about issuing new mandates, and we don't want to offend the cities in any way like that. Representative Howe?
And thank you, Madam Chair. And I will say that I'm committed to continue to work on the process, because I know we're not done yet, and I've committed to both the Department of Veterans Affairs and the League of Minnesota Cities that I still believe that it needs some work, and I think we can get there, but I do believe that we need to get this language in. We need to pass this to make sure that it codifies what currently happens and give that veteran a fair and impartial hearing.
Representative Representative Denver.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Howell. You know, my name has been on it, been off it, and it's on again when you came out with the DE3 amendment. And I chatted with you several times. I've chatted with the veterans groups, MDVA, and who the veterans groups MDVA now is on. I know the cities and counties have still some concern, but I think you're right. It's put some language that we needed to have in statute, and I would say let's go ahead and get this through, and then you know, we can look at it again if we need to make some changes in the next session. But I think the changes that you've made, Representative Howell, are good. I think we need to continue. It's a very complicated issue, obviously, and but I think some changes that you made here are good, and my name is back on it, so thank you.
Did you take your name off?
I did.
Oh.
It's back on since the DE3.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the League of Cities, I know that you do some insurance for the cities. Is this something that the cities could be insured for?
I don't know the answer to that question. I apologize. I can get back to you with that.
Okay. Well, more importantly, it'd probably be better if you could get back to Representative Howe, because if the cities can be insured for this, Representative Driscoll is telling me no. And one of my concerns, and Representative Howe, I've been going back and forth on this because I've got two very large counties and a lot of cities that are opposed to it. And yet, from a veteran's point of view, I see the purpose of it. And so I'm tending to favor moving forward with this with assurances from you that we'll continue to work on it and find a better way. And one thing I think we might do is, I see Mr. McEhaney up there, but perhaps have MDVA pay for the cost. And this way we're not imposing a mandate on the cities and to have it put in the MDVA budget as an option, one of many. Thank you.
Representative Howe.
Madam Chair, and I do believe that when talking to MDVA, they indicated that the average cost of one of these hearings was about $3,500. And I don't think that's an overbearing. Now, the one that we heard about the other day for $64,000 was huge, but mainly that was because it was drawn out by the governmental agency, not the veteran. The veteran was done in a day in his testimony, and it took another 9 or 10 days to get it there, and that's what bore the cost. I do believe that most of these are going to be done relatively quickly. The other thing I think makes a big impact there is most government employees usually are union, and they have the choice to go through either this or the union process, through the grievance process, to an arbitrator. So most of those cases are going to probably go that direction because they've got union representation in that. I do believe that this is going to be a small amount of veterans that end up through this hearing process.
But Representative House, even with all your beliefs and all the changes that have taken place, you're still willing to work on it going forward?
Absolutely, Madam Chair.
Any further discussion? Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, Madam Chair, I want to first of all thank you and the other members of this committee. It is the government, state government finance and veterans affairs, and there is no question in my mind that the people that are on this table want what's best for our veterans, and we are trying to get to that. Could you, for the committee's benefit, remind us where this is being re-referred to after today's vote?
It's being re-referred to the general register.
And for the committee's peace of mind and for those who are stakeholders in this, procedurally, we could still amend this bill, even though it's on the general register, if we get better language or language that helps us to better accomplish our goal and purpose on the House floor on this.
Yes.
And so I would say that this is not the last time you're going to have, as a committee member, a chance to hear, see, or respond to this bill. And Representative Howe has provided us reassurances that he plans to move forward to do the right thing, and I know that everybody around this table does want to do the right thing by veterans. So I would ask that we move this out to the General Register, and if it does not come to the General Register the way that Representative Howe would be comfortable with, I'm sure he will ask to hold off on that. And I know Representative Howe has been visiting with other members of this committee, both on a bipartisan basis, to find the best, and I would have no reason to believe that he wouldn't continue to do that. And so, stakeholders, I think that you know that sometimes we get differing views on different topics that come here, but veterans is always something that's been rather nonpartisan, and I suspect it will stay the same way. So just consider that, members, when you cast a vote on this particular bill today.
Representative Crenshaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be very brief, but as I was thinking through this and watching the process that Representative Howe has gone through, I couldn't help but be reminded of how much he has spoken to and worked very hard to your standard of cooperation. This bill has changed, and I know that I have some counties as well that have come out, but I think, as Representative O'Driscoll has pointed out, we've got a pretty good balance here, and I would support the motion to move this to the General Register as well.
Representative
Kahn. As I understand, there's one case that we're really talking about. Has there really been a general dissatisfaction with the civil service panel?
There are at least three cases of people that have attended each of these hearings that are very interested. So there are at least three, and I'm sure there's half a dozen or so. But we can find out by getting some experience if we pass this out.
Madam Chair, I...
And there are still, you know, lots of discussions that can take place, and there's people have talked about different approaches, but the time has come to decide if we're going to put it on the table or if we're going to send it to the General Register.
Madam Chair, I renew my motion to recommend that House File 2117, as amended, be referred to the General Register.
And that's the DE3 amendment?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Motion is adopted. Go Thank forth you. To the General Register.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
Next item on the agenda is information hearing. No action will be taken. Representative Paul Anderson wants to share something in his district that he's interested in, a place in his district that helps veterans, and it's called Eagle Healing Nest. And Representative Anderson wants to make us aware of it. No action will be taken. He has 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Let's hope the spirit of cooperation continues, and I wish this hearing had been last week, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, Eagle's Healing Nest is back in my district in Sauk Center. It's at the old girls' reformatory campus on the outskirts of town, and it's been operating now for about a year and a half, mainly with volunteer work and help, and these people put their hearts and souls into this effort. They've been going for about 17 months, and currently there are about between 40 and 42 veterans being housed at the Eagle's Nest. They've refurbished three buildings so far. And they are doing excellent work back there, have great support locally from the town and organizations. The bill we had originally called for a $100,000 grant to them from the general fund. We realized there's no money available in this committee. And we looked at the Support Our Troops Fund, which does have money available. It could be used for this purpose, depending on the legislature's intent. So that would be a possibility. It's a new type of thing. They're outside the box in what they do. And I think there's agreement that there are some of our veterans that are slipping through the cracks and not getting the the treatment and such that they need. And the Eagles Healing Nest is doing an excellent job in filling that need, at least to this limited number of about 40 veterans. And there was some concern about money going to that private operation and oversight, accountability. And the lady that's in charge up there has agreed to a full accounting of every penny that would go to the Eagles Healing Nest, and talking with the MDVA that they would be involved in some type of oversight as well in seeing that what goes on up there is done in a correct fashion. So that is my pitch to you. It's a great place up there. What they do is they do some great things. I just talked to her yesterday, and she got a call at 6 o'clock yesterday morning to come down to the Hennepin County Courthouse, pick up a veteran who was having some issues. Took her back to the nest, and they're taking care of them. And that's they do those types of things for people that may slip through the cracks. So that is my comment, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Any questions?
Madam Chair, I see MDVA is here with if they would like to come up and address this issue with the Eagle's Nest.
Do you wish to have MDVA testify, Mr. Anderson?
Yeah, they certainly can.
Representative Anderson?
They certainly can.
Mr. McElhenney, welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Mike McKelly, Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And since this is informational only, I just wanted to express the fact that MDVA is on board with assisting any organization that assists veterans. But in doing so, there is a process. There is an oversight that we feel that we would need to provide. The bill, as Representative Anderson has suggested, talks about the Support Our Troops account funds, and there's specific criteria for what those grants can be used for. And just in the process of seeking grants, there's a variety of measures that must be met, must be verified, and so forth. And so this being informational, would like to state at this point that there's not been any of those measures met at this point in time, but we are working with the Eagles Healing Nest and those folks up there to do what's necessary to meet those. So I just wanted that information to be well known, and that the position of MDVA is we support veterans and those that support veterans.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Wills. 5 minutes. Representative Wills has a informational presentation for us. There will not be time for anyone outside of the 5 minutes.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'll be as brief as possible. It's a fairly simple bill, and I appreciate the time to have an informational hearing to start the discussion. If you look at the bill language, it's changing the disabled veterans credit in the hiring and promotional process for a veteran looking for employment. And so it's changing the points for a veteran being hired from 15 points to 20 points, and then a veteran seeking a promotion from 5 points to 20 points to create a consistency. And then in the definitions of a disabled veteran, it creates a threshold of 30% or greater for the compensable service disconnected disability for the hiring process, and then lowers the threshold from 50% to 30% for the promotional process. So that is the bill, and I have Jerry Kaiser here to add any detail or explanation of why we're looking to make this change.
And maybe, Mr. Kaiser, you could tell us what would be the effect of changing the preference points.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and members of the committee. I'm not an expert on veterans' processes, but the thing is that trying to make consistent with the federal process, it's 30% disabled is the process that they use for hiring. Previously, it's 10%. You're not really a disabled veteran. It is for purposes of getting money, you, at 10%, you do get a process, but the federal rate for hiring is 30% to be considered a disabled veteran, and that's just being consistent with that. The getting the numbers straight is if you get 5%, 15% one and 5% in the other, we're just keeping that consistent. And then for the to get a promotion, you're already at 30%, then you have to get have to have a 50% disability for any kind of points to be promoted. Well, it's almost like you got to gain 20% of disability while you're working in order to get promoted. That doesn't seem very right to me. Is that making sense, ma'am?
I'm not sure if it makes sense or not, because I don't have a good enough understanding of what preference points do or who uses them and where in what situations. Therefore, I think that bringing this to our attention, I think before we would ever take the bill up, we should have a planned presentation on veterans' points and preferences. And probably since Representative Howe brought it in, on the civil service boards. So we have a better understanding of that, those functions in the world of lawmaking or in employment or in veterans being hired and so forth. But thank you very much. We appreciate your contribution and the information that you have provided us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I may, I just had an additional comment. Representative Purcell and also a member of the public who is here today who would like to add a few words if he could, brought up one point with the bill on the line 1.17.
The next committee is ready to come in.
So I don't know if we have time, but we do have a member from the public.
We're going to go over, and they are under the same time restraints that we are under.
Madam Chair, I'll move the approval of the minutes of March 24th meeting.
Thank you very much. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. And please pay attention to the committee postings. I don't have what's going on yet for the Monday or Wednesday. We are waiting for the pension bill, and that will be next. This meeting is adjourned. My apologies.